No more oil for you.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The U.S. and other oil-consuming countries want OPEC to put more oil on the market so the price might drop. But today at a meeting in Abu Dhabi, OPEC said no. Oil prices have come down on their own recently from close to $100 a barrel to about $90. Still, oil prices that high are a concern, obviously for oil consumers, but also for OPEC. If oil is too expensive, there should be less demand. Let's turn now to Axel Busch with the group Energy Intelligence. Well, Axel, has higher oil reduced demand?
Well, so far there has been no major demand destruction because of high prices. But we've been saying, the world has been saying, that demand would decline for the past 3 years. Every $10 goes up, they say the same thing, and nothing happens. It's only very recently, actually, we've seen a decline in demand in an industrialized world, but that has been more than offset by demand increases in a developing world and in the Middle East.
Ideally, where would OPEC like the price of oil to be?
They haven't a clue, nor do we. But my guess is they're perfectly happy anywhere between $70 and $90.
So if oil stays about where it is now, probably no increase in production in January either?
Don't forget, we at that point, we'll be heading towards the second quarter, which is always a sort of low-demand quarter. In fact, OPEC is going to meet in February, and they already have on their agenda the idea of a potential production cut to cope with demand decline in second quarter. Second quarter, we always see a demand decline as the Northern Hemisphere comes out of the heating oil season.
All right. Axel Busch, chief correspondent with Energy Intelligence. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The weak dollar has been another driver of high oil prices. The dollar gained back a little bit of its value today, and there was a rally in the Asian stock markets. In Japan, the Nikkei added almost 1%. European shares have climbed more than 1% so far. The Dow begins trading at 13,248. It lost 65 points yesterday. The NASDAQ fell 17, and the S&P 500 dropped 9. A new TV commercial in Italy depicted the nativity scene. The three wise men are in it. So is the baby Jesus and his mother. But there's a fourth wise man, and his gift to Mary is a can of Red Bull. As you can imagine, this didn't go over very well with the Catholic Church. Megan Williams has more from Rome.
While an exhausted postpartum Mary might have appreciated a caffeine boost, a Sicilian priest finds it in bad taste. Father Marco Diamanti calls the TV ad, which depicts an extra wise man delivering a can of Red Bull to Mary and baby Jesus, blasphemous.
Maria, Red Bull è una bevanda energetica che mette le ali.
He let the soft drink company know, and it pulled the ad. Diamanti also objects to the motto, Red Bull gives you wings, but that won't likely change. Poking fun at Christianity in ads is hardly new here. For years, Lavazzo Coffee has run commercials with Italian actors depicted as angels in paradise discussing how heavenly the coffee is. Those commercials have escaped the wrath of the Catholic Church, but others haven't. Sony and Madonna are just two who have had their ads pulled or banned for religious reasons. In Rome, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, December 5th on Marketplace.org. Foreign visitors who land at Dulles Airport today in Washington will have to give 10, as in 10 fingers. Homeland Security is rolling out a new security system that requires all 10 fingerprints instead of just 2. Many more airports will be doing this for foreign visitors next year. More now from Jeremy Hobson.
The fingerprints will be compared with growing government watch lists to catch, as Anna Hinken of U.S. Visit puts it,
dangerous people that we don't want in the United States.
Hinken says having 10 fingerprints will give the government a big advantage. She says the system will cost upwards of $200 million, but some say the price may be much higher.
When you don't ask people for their business and you only put up barriers, the end result is very predictable.
Jeff Freeman is with Discover America, a group of business leaders trying to boost the number of tourists here in the U.S. Freeman says government figures show a 17% drop in foreign visitors since 9/11 has cost the nation $100 billion and 200,000 jobs.
And much of that decline is due to a negative perception of the entry experience.
Freeman says if 10 fingerprints are needed, the U.S. needs to do a better job telling foreign visitors why. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
We've talked about subprime mortgages ad nauseum for the past few months, but often it's in a macroeconomic context or a Wall Street context. There are so many people that have been affected by this story in a very personal way. From our America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch has one of those stories.
Catalina Bryan is from the Dominican Republic. When she arrived in the U.S., she found work in the only business she knew, sewing, from 6 a.m. to midnight, for 40 years.
Cosiendo. 40 años.
Catalina raised her son Ramon in 8 different homes, always on the move in search of a safer neighborhood. Ramon says there was one constant, the click of the sewing machine.
There's a lot of mothers out there that wouldn't make the type of sacrifice my mom made for me, so I feel indebted to her for life.
Ramon was the first person in his family to graduate high school, to finish college, to get an MBA. He began repaying his debt to his mom in Thanksgiving of 2001, when he bought her a brand new house.
It was a surreal feeling, like just being in the living room of our new home. Like, all the furniture was still in boxes, and we're like eating turkey on the floor. And I'm just looking around and just like, wow, you know, I did it.
Ramon started his career in ad sales, but a cousin lured him into real estate finance. He started working for Resme, a subprime mortgage lender. He made $30,000 in a single month.
Then your mind starts wandering. You see it as, okay, I made 30 this month, it's going to stay like that. You know, me being a business person as well, I'm like, let me buy some more property and hold on to it.
Subprime lending, much maligned now, did offer many Hispanics like Ramon Bryan the opportunity to own a home. The number of Hispanic homeowners nationwide jumped by nearly 50% in just 7 years. Ramon sold that American dream, and he bought it, too. He purchased the home for his mom, another for himself, his childhood condo, and an investment property. All four have adjustable-rate mortgages. All four are subprime loans. Ramon leased an office to go into business for himself. Then the mortgage market crashed. Now he's out of a job, and he's on the hook for $16,000 a month. Plus, he supports his mother.
You pick up the mail, and there's like a ton of bills, and you see a lot of money going out of your bank account and not as much money coming in. I've worked really hard to get to where I'm at, and I don't want to lose it. So how do I keep it?
Ramon's looking for a job back in ad sales. He was forced to rent the house he bought for his mom. Catalina's back in their cramped childhood condo. A framed photo of Ramon in a cap and gown hangs by her bedroom door. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
New polls out this week suggest the economy is now the number one issue for voters, ahead of terrorism, ahead of the war in Iraq. Commentator Robert Reich says this isn't just because of the housing market or the recent economic slowdown.
The real reason is middle-class families have exhausted the coping mechanisms they've used for over 3 decades to get by on median wages that are barely higher than they were in the 1970s, adjusted for inflation. The income of a young man in his 30s today is actually 12% below that of a man 3 decades ago. The first coping mechanism was moving more women into paid work. The percent of working mothers with school-aged children has almost doubled since 1970, from 38% to about 70%. Some parents are now even doing 24-hour shifts, one on child duty while the other works. I call these families DINs, standing for double income, no sex. When families couldn't paddle any harder, we started paddling longer. The typical American now works 2 weeks more each year than we did 30 years ago. Compared to any other advanced nation, we're veritable workaholics, putting in 350 more hours a year than the average European, more even than the Japanese. As the tide of economic necessity continued to rise, we turned to the third coping mechanism. We began taking equity out of our homes, big time. But now that home prices are sinking for the first time in decades, this no longer keeps us afloat. As Moody's reported last week, defaults on home equity loans have surged to the highest level this decade. In short, it's the economy, stupid. But not just the current slowdown. The underlying problem began around 1970, and any presidential candidate seeking to address it will have to think bigger than stimulating the economy with tax cuts or spending increases. The fact is, most Americans are still not prospering in the global economy, and almost all the benefits of economic growth have gone to a small number at the very top. The candidate who acknowledges this and comes up with a way to truly spread prosperity will have a good chance of winning over America's middle class.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His new book is called Super Capitalism. If you'd like to weigh in on this topic, check out the Marketplace Confessional online at marketplace.org. Finally, this morning, the TV ratings people now want to be the internet video police. Nielsen is unveiling a new service that filters video clips through a database to see if the video has been authorized by its production company. Nielsen hopes to target companies like YouTube, MySpace, and NBC Universal. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.